So sit back, enjoy. We have a group of farm broadcasters and ag reporters, as I said, that will be asking the questions, the issues on a variety of ag and rural issues. I think you all know what they are. Tom Rothman, who's the farm director with Minnesota Farm Network. Don Wick, farm director with WCCO Radio. Kevin Schultz, who's the editor of the Land newspaper. And Lynn Kettleson will be joining us in just a little bit, farm director with the Linder Farm Network. So I'm going to turn it over to Tom, and he's going to fire the first question, and Jerry Janasek will respond.
My question pertains to farm policy, and 60 seconds isn't much time to answer this. Can you give us your highlights of what your farm policy would look like if you were U.S. Senate, U.S. Senator, and would it contain any kind of production controls? Thank you.
First of all, it wouldn't contain any type of production controls. I would increase the loan rate. I would look at rewarding conservation as part of the picture. We currently have a CRP program that I would increase. I would maintain the flexibility that the old farm bill has, because I think that's something that farmers would like. And I believe that I would extend the loan period from 9 months to something other than it currently is. It's pretty easy when they know when you're putting it in and when you're taking it out. And thank you.
Well, my farm policy would reflect my background. I'm a fifth generation farmer's daughter from East Grand Forks, Minnesota. So first and foremost, my farm policy would look at boosting farm income, because I think that's what's really been devastating our farmers throughout Minnesota. I certainly heard those stories when I traveled to Washington, D.C. on the Rally for Rural America. We can boost farm income by helping gather together in cooperatives for marketing our products rather than relying on some large corporations to kind of hold us hostage on the pricing. I think we also boost pricing by focusing on the quality of what we're offering. And to the extent that we can support organics and specialized farming, I certainly support that also. I also support our environment, our conservation reserve program, I think is a very valuable tool. Certainly include programs to provide relief on loan rates, owner reserved policies for storing our own products so we can market it better and again increase income. But overall, I really want to be there to make sure I'm the voice for the farmers.
I support the goals of Freedom to Farm, but not the results. In order for Freedom to Farm to succeed, I think other things have to occur simultaneously. Chief among these are policies that help farmers to export products. And there's two things to bear in mind here. First of all, we not only need to open up foreign markets, we need to make sure that our markets are open to other foreign products, because there's a relationship between what we buy and what we're able to sell. Ultimately, foreigners buy our products with the products they're able to sell to us. So it's not just a matter of opening markets, but also making sure we're open to purchases from foreign countries. Secondly, there's a relationship, a very solid relationship between how much we save as a nation and what our exchange rates are and how well we can do in foreign markets. Countries that are high-saving nations run trade surpluses. Countries that are low-saving nations tend to run trade deficits. And so farmers are, because they're very much involved in the global market, they're adversely affected by the fact that we're a high-consumption nation. So I propose policies that will enhance national savings rates as well.
You know, I've been working on environmental matters as the founder and president of the Earth Protect Environmental Group for 18 years. And one thing people know about me is that when I give my word that I'm going to do something, I do it and I get it done. And my purpose in being here today and after studying the farm market a little bit is to assure everybody in the farming community that if Leslie Davis goes to Washington, D.C., that I'm going to be the strongest, most truthful, honest advocate for your issues that there ever was in Washington, D.C. Now, I studied this issue up a little bit and talking to people about why the prices are where they are and about trade and things like that. And one thing I learned is there is nobody that's an expert in this particular area. I can't figure out why corn costs $2 an acre to get out of the field and you get $1.26 for it and people around the world are starving. So one of the things in my administration, I'm going to have a $4 million budget every year for 6 years if I'm a U.S. senator. And what I'm going to do with that money, part of it is going to be to hire a farm expert that's going to be part of my program. And we're going to find out exactly where the problem is, and we're going to solve it. And I can't tell you today that I'm an expert on what the problem is, but it seems to be multifaceted. But you can count on me to represent your interests.
I'm Mark Dayton. First, I want to say I think it's shameful that Senator Grams is not here today. We've known about this debate for over 2 months, and if he could be here yesterday, he could be here today. Of course, if I had to defend the present policies that I helped to pass through Congress in 1996, I wouldn't want to be here either. I come from a business family, and I know if you can't make a fair profit in the marketplace, you can't stay in business. And we've got to put the profit in the marketplace back into American agriculture, and that should be the first and foremost goal of our policies. Not by production controls, by raising loan rates, should be over $2 for corn, should be $5.20 as it is for beans, it should be commodity loan rates across all commodities to give farmers the flexibilities. Then the deficiency payments should be capped higher than the president proposed, but capped so that they target family-sized farms. And if you want to get bigger and bigger and play in the world markets, then you do so, but you're on your own. We've got to take the concentration out of the industry so the big meat packers, the big grain distributors don't control 80-plus percent of the market, put the profits to the farmers rather than the middlemen and beyond.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Mike Cerisi. Contrary to Becky, I can't take a lot from my grandparents since my grandfather had an olive orchard in Sicily. And there's not much I can take from that and apply here in America. But let's look at the problem. The problem arises from supply and demand. That's the problem. What do we want to accomplish? A level playing field. How did we get to where we're at? We should understand that there's been a policy in this country of inexpensive food for our citizens. From World War II forward, we fed the armies, then we rebuilt Western Europe, their production facilities got up, and now we're competing in a world marketplace that is not a level playing field. So specifically, what can we do to rectify this supply and demand? CRP, I agree, it should be increased. We have a situation where that's what I call a threefer. It's good for the farmers, it's good for the environment, it sends a message to the rest of the world, and it's also good for sportsmen and women. Extend the loan repayment period, and we have to have market intervention at a price level, but it has to be cut off at some point. If people want to get really big, that's great, but they're going to do it on their own. We have to protect the family producer, because as we move into the new technology, they're going to have greater and greater opportunities for specialized crops.
Hi, my name's Oli Savior. Where are your Oli jokes now? Brad Grams doesn't care about the farmers. He only cares about himself. He's been invisible for 5 years. Now he wants another term for 6 years. That's ridiculous. We have a family farm crisis and over the corporate farms. Both are important, but not at the expense of small farmers' livelihood. We must save the family farms. That will be my number one priority. The family farm is what's made America. We need to increase production, not make less production. There's over 32,000 children each day dying from hunger, starvation, neglect, and we need to use our family farms and all our resources to feed these families all over the world, not just in the United States. We need to make sure family farms don't disappear. They've been disappearing quite thousands each year. And corporate companies have been buying up the farms. And we need to help the farmers as much as we could, give loans, grants, and anything else we can do.
Thank you. Again, if you've just joined us, this is our U.S. Senate Candidates Forum, and each of the candidates, we have five DFL candidates and two Independence Party candidates, and they'll be answering questions. And we'll go to the second question, and Rebecca Yanish will answer first. Don Wick.
Labor and the bulk of the agriculture group seem to be very much divided on the issue of permanent normal trade relations for China. Minnesota Congressman David Menge supported PNTR, saying it was a no-brainer for agriculture. As you look at this issue, where do you come down?
Well, it is a really difficult issue, and I look at this issue from growing up hearing my father talking with great pride in his voice about feeding the world. I'm sure there are many farmers in this room that have been raised with the idea that their greatest goal in life is to feed the world. The reality is, as we've continued to export and do a better job at increasing our acreage, the prices continue to drop. And I think the fundamental issue of income here is something we have to look at. Yes, I would love it if our foreign trade with China would be the solution to the farm prices, but I have to say I'm sympathetic to labor also, because as we look at the trends, there's a whole population that's down there in the trenches right now that are not benefiting from foreign trade.
This is James Gibson. I'm definitely in favor of normalized trade relations with China, strongly in favor of the WTO. I'm a pro-trade candidate. I believe we all have a lot to gain from trade. There's always going to be the challenge to decide how benefits from trade are distributed in society, but in aggregate, we benefit immensely from trade, and we need policies that promote that, not that hinder it.
Leslie Davis. I came to Minnesota in 1962. And until 1982, when I formed the Earth Protector Environmental Group, I traveled on the road and I sold through this territory, town by town, block by block. People like Ehlers in Redwood Falls, who you might know, or Jim Corson of Corson's in Hutchinson. And I didn't like anybody telling me who I can sell or can't sell. And I don't want anybody telling me that we can't sell our product to Cuba or China or anybody else that's a market for that particular product. So I'm for open trade anywhere around the world where people want to buy food. If they want to barter for it, if they want to beg for it, if they want to pay for it, we've got the food and we can supply it to them. And I'm for that.
I'm Mark Dayton. I oppose the PNGR as proposed by this administration. I'm for trade, but the words free trade and fair trade are fictions and political slogans. Trade has been established in the interests of some people or interests versus another since the beginning of commerce and will be done so as long as all of us are alive and thereafter. The question is, in whose interest? And American trade policy has been designed and implemented the last 20 years or so in the interest of large multinational corporations who want to be able to produce products overseas, import them here, take away American jobs, and farmers have been sold. I think what in the balance has been an untruth that free markets are going to result in higher prices. The only thing that's become free in the free trade policies for farmers is the prices are almost down to that level. You look at NAFTA, the Canadian farmers are bringing their wheat into the United States, into Minnesota. They're putting our farmers out of business, driving prices down. American jobs going to Mexico, their produce is coming in here, further depressing our market prices. And we can't even get the walleye limit equalized between the Canadian and American border. We need a trade policy that's in the interest of the people of the United States of America.
This is Mike Cerisi. 20% of farm income is from exports. I am in favor of PNTR so long as the Senate attaches the 11B Rider Amendment, which deals with environmental and labor issues. What we need to do is to take a look at the WTO process. My concern is that we have misplaced our effort and our time on PNTR. What we need to do is kick down the doors of WTO. We have unknown bureaucrats making decisions that abrogate environmental labor laws and affect agriculture in this country without any input. Producers have to have a voice at the table, and we need a more democratic process at the WTO. I think it is unreasonable to expect that we're just going to dictate on the world stage. We have to be there and negotiate in accordance with legally based processes. That's what we don't have. That's why we're being disadvantaged.
Hi, I'm Holy Savior. I'm in favor of free trade with China, Cuba, or any other country that we can send our products to. But they do have to, we cannot ignore their human rights. Many people have ignored their human rights, and that's not fair to the people in the other countries. We need to expand our product exportation And any country that needs food, we cannot deny them that access. We need to help the farmers more, produce more. We need to not take the farmland out of production. We need to keep it in production. We need millions of people out there starving. And every day we need price controls to, before you even make your crop, maybe have a price control that you know is fair. Instead of having between what the farmer gets and the middleman gets in the grocery store, there's a big difference. And they're cheating you. And you got to come right out and just demand your rights.
I am Jerry Janicic, the DFL endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate, and the only candidate who went to Seattle and marched against the WTO with our farmers, our working men and women, the environmental community, and our students. In our state, there are two industries that are already in a world economy and have been for a long time: agriculture and steel. Both have been the backbone of not only our country, but of rural Minnesota. What two industries in our state are suffering the most? And why? Because we can't get a price for what we do. Currently, it doesn't work. And it was good to see our young people and labor and ag and the environmental community all marching together, because you know what? In our country's history, they've been our social conscience. It's not what's working for us now.
That completes our responses to the second question. Again, come on in. This is our U.S. Senate Candidates Forum, where each candidate has 60-second responses to questions. We'll go to the third question. Mr. Gibson will answer first, and Kevin Schultz will be asking the question.
First of all, I want to take the opportunity to thank each of you to show up today. Yes, we know Senator Grahams is not here, should be here, but he isn't. Let's get beyond that. Let's hear what each of you are going to bring to the table, not what he has or has not done. My question centers on the mergers and concentration of agriculture. What is your take on, you know, these mega mergers that we're seeing? And we hear it mainly when we're talking the grain companies going together, but depending what level at you're at and what side of the fence you're on, you also hear it at the farm level. You know, what farm is too big? Well, one more hog than I have is too big, and those mergers are being criticized as well. What could you do at the federal level for all mergers, and can we set a level?
Well, first of all, consolidation is an issue that goes beyond agriculture. This is an ongoing problem, and it's something that the government, the Antitrust Division in particular, needs to be very vigilant about. One has to be careful of proposals such as moratoriums, because the reason one firm may be in the position of merging or in the need to merge is because they're losing money, and the result of preventing that merger may be the one company goes out of business and you in effect have the same problem in the end anyway. If it gets to the point where we have unconcentration, insufficient competition, it is the role of government to step in and create that competition, just as they're now attempting to do with Microsoft. So that would be my position. Thanks.
Leslie Davis. You know, there are lots of specialty crops that the smaller farmer can grow, and I'd like to see, instead of concentrating on their game on the mergers and its vertical integration, I'd like to talk about the smaller farmer that has an opportunity to grow crops like peas and sweet corn and oats. And I bet I can ask a question that I won't see one hand in the room go up on, that who knows anybody that's growing anything that they're getting off the land that they're producing $400 an acre for. Does anybody know anybody getting $400 an acre for anything? Well, the University of Kentucky says that if farmers were to grow hemp and the added values to the growing of hemp in their communities would produce $600 an acre. So what happens if Cargill or ConAgra or one of those multinational giants comes to you and said, well, we want your corn and your soybeans and stuff like that, and you say, well, you know, there are markets developing, and I think I'm going to put my land in hemp for food and fuel and fiber and oil and things like that, and get the added values for the community so that the farmer becomes part of the community again and not a victim. Thank you.
I think it's this is Mark Dayton. I think it's an excellent question in both parts. Yes, when three or four companies control 80% or more of a market, the economists will say you have a monopoly. And we have de facto monopolies in the meatpacking operations, in the large grain companies, and that's one of the reasons that market prices have been so depressed. We've had evidence, convictions of price collusion in this country with major company, and that may or may not be the tip of the iceberg. The federal government has failed in agriculture, as it has failed consistently across this country, to protect the people of this country from large special corporate interests whose special interest money pollutes Washington and contaminates the decision-making process. In terms of individual farmers, Minnesota has a good anti-corporate farm law, which unfortunately is being eroded. I think most farmers are feeling forced to get bigger, and if we put the profits back into the marketplace, I think we won't see such a rush to that kind of ever-increasing sizing.
This is Mike Cerisi. One of the last places you want to be is in a courtroom. It takes too long to get results, and by the time you get the results, the farmer is bankrupt. Having said that, we have a greater and greater concentration of power in this country, and the antitrust laws in this new economy need to be reexamined. That does not mean we need new laws, but they need to be interpreted in light of what we're doing today. The law, folks, comes not from logic necessarily, but from experience. And that means you look at what's going on in the economy and the environment today. That's what we need to do, and we need to have the antitrust division of the Justice Department fully funded so they can take on cases like the Microsoft case. I was the first candidate to speak out on the Northwest Airlines issue. We are seeing greater and greater concentrations, and the laws have to be vigorously interpreted in light of the market conditions of today, and that means the case law has to change as we go forward.
Thank you.
Holy Savior, the Independence Party, they want to grow hemp. They want to grow marijuana. That's against all my thoughts of that we should, the drug abuse in the United States is getting worse and worse. And marijuana growing and okaying it and telling us that we should grow marijuana and hemp instead of food for the poor, what kind of Independence Party is that? We need these starving people all over the world. Marijuana and drug abuse and everything else that they stand for, I'm against. And I want them to know it. I challenge them to change their ways. Smoking marijuana, thinking that they can do that legally. No, we shouldn't go for that. Marijuana is illegal, and I want to keep it that way. I'm done.
How do you feel about antitrust?
You? You're okay.
We'll go over to Jerry Janicek now.
I'm DFL-endorsed candidate Jerry Janicek from...
about antitrust.
You? You're okay.
We'll go over to Jerry Janicek now.
I'm DFL-endorsed candidate Jerry Janicek from Chisholm, Minnesota. And you know us rural people, we have a tendency to want to move slowly, cautiously. Take a look at what's happening and what's not happening. So I kind of early on came out with an opinion that we should have a moratorium on all these mergers. And ultimately it comes down to two things, I believe. Number one is competition, and number two is ownership. Competition, and then who owns what.
Rebecca Yanish, and I think I would take a three-pronged approach. First is enforcement of the antitrust laws, and I do agree that a moratorium on occasion is helpful to slow down issues, take a good thoughtful look at it, and say, you know, should we be proceeding or not? And Jim, I really don't think ADM or Cargill are going to go out of business if we take a little time to look at their marketing here. Second approach is to really support other initiatives to market our farm produce, and I talked about that in my first remarks too. We have to find other ways to gather together as farmers and to sell our products so we aren't reliant only on the big agribusinesses. And the third point is that we must have campaign finance reform because it is the corrupting influence of money in our elections and in Washington, D.C. that continue this pattern of large agribusiness dominance in farming.
Okay, that completes our third round of answers to questions. Our fourth question, we'll go back to Tom Rothman.
Thanks, Kent. Over the past year, there's been over $20 billion in aid to farmers in this country in various forms because of very, very difficult economic times on the farm. But there are other rural businesses and urban businesses that have also suffered at times for a variety of reasons. Do they deserve equal aid?
You know, when you go into business, you take your shot, you take your chance. But there's a difference between the other businesses, the corner grocery store, and the farmer, and the food provider. So no, I don't believe that the other businesses in the communities should have an opportunity to be bailed out by the government. It's not that their product isn't being replaced, because it is. You have other companies moving in, and all the farmers run there to support them, the Kmarts, the Walmarts, the Menards, the Home Depots. Everybody's loving to go to those places and buy those cheaper products, and they've abandoned the small retailer and the small merchant in their town. So why should the government bail out those that the farmers have abandoned?
Economic policy should be designed and executed in the best interests of the economy of the country, and that means all the people of the country. And I don't think there's one hard and fast rule you can apply to one industry and say that should apply across the board. If somebody doesn't like what they have at Dayton's, they can go to Walmart. They can go to Kohl's. If somebody doesn't like produced in this acre, they don't go to the other acre. By the time those products get up to the level of the consumer, from the level of production, from the site of production, everything has been thrown into that mix. So I don't think they're comparable. And given the importance of agriculture to Main Street, Minnesota, to the profitability of every business on Main Street, Minnesota, as well as to the farms themselves, then we have a critical stake in the viability of agriculture in the state, this nation. We need policies, as I said before, to put the profit back in the marketplace, but when government must step in then to make up in bad years, that deficiency absolutely should do so without any qualms whatsoever.
Now, this is Mike Cerisi. When I announced for the Senate, I said that one of my major planks was rural revitalization. And rural revitalization is not just the farms, although it's a significant portion of it. We need to help rural America. By the way, there are 54 million people in rural America, 20% of our population in this country. We need a national debate. Do we want a healthy rural economy? I believe the answer is yes. What do we have to do? We have to help rural America get across the digital divide, just as we did with the REA. That will encourage entrepreneurs and small businesses to be there. All over this state, I've talked to small business people. They need this type of help. They want to grow in the rural areas. That helps the farmers. It helps the small cities. It helps the small towns. We need to make sure that the educational system is intact and solid and that kids can get a good education. So we need targeted financial help in rural areas in education. You have to have the infrastructure in order to grow the economy. And if we get these types of things, rural America can be vibrant. It's going to change, but it can be vibrant and will be vibrant.
Holy Savior, $20 billion should have been $40. It should have been $100 billion. And it should help out other businesses. Farm areas, job employment, anything we can do, we should help the farmers, the communities. Give those dollars back to them. They deserve it. The farmers need to be assured that we are backing them. They don't need to be moving to the cities. We need the farmers on the farm. We need the people, the farmers, to feed other people. Too many farmers are giving up. We got to start encouraging them to stay into farming. Their children also. And I want to see as much, I will do as much as I can to get the finances back to you. Many of your taxes are going to the federal government. Minnesota, Rod Grams does not bring back, $1 goes out to Washington, and we get maybe 40, 50 cents back. We got to get more of our money back. We got to help the farmers. Like I said, we need to, $20 billion is too small. We need many more billions coming back to you.
I'm Jerry Janisich, DFL-endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate, and I'm a small businessman. In my other life, when I'm not running for public office, I own a bar. And for the love of me, I look around, and I don't know how many of you got that money. It seems to me that all you want is a price for your product. And if you have that, you don't care about that other money. And I kind of believe that by the time it gets to you, there isn't much left. And I think that has to change. And I think that somebody who wants to fight for you to change that is what we need. And as a small businessman, all I want is my $2.25 for that beer I sell. And all you want is a price for your product. And if you're making it, I'm making it.
Rebecca Yanish. Well, as I look at this issue, you know, it really to me comes down to our values and priorities as a nation. I certainly know the value of growing up on a farm and the value of the community in East Grand Forks that supported our family and was based on that farm income. You know, when my hometown was devastated by floods in 97, it's still struggling to come back. But I think even more devastating than the flooding was the loss in farm income in the years since then because of the lack of prices. So I see it as an investment in our values here and an investment too in our communities throughout rural Minnesota. And this is more than just a phrase. It's really coming back to the issues that are fundamental to the values we place on our lives. And it's an investment in our communities, and very rightfully so.
I'm James Gibson. I'm probably the only candidate here who has taken a firm stance that we need to phase out subsidies. This isn't just about farm subsidies. I'm taking strong stances against other types of subsidies. I took a strong stance against the stadium subsidy. Doesn't mean it has to occur overnight, but we have to make progress in that direction. Subsidies distort the market. When you see low prices, they're partially a result of the fact that subsidies have been in place for a very long time. There's land in production today that would never have been put in production without those subsidies. We need to be very cautious about subsidizing anyone, any kind of business. Now, we talk about what other kinds, how can we revitalize rural America? There's a case for government to be involved when it comes to infrastructure. And as Mike pointed out, a major issue right now is providing high-speed digital access to rural areas, because if they can provide that, businesses can be attracted to the area. And I personally wouldn't mind living in a small town if I had high-speed digital access.
Okay, that completes this round of responses, and we'll continue on. I believe Mark Dayton will have the first response with our fifth question. Don Wick.
We're in the biotechnology age. What's your vision for this tool? How do you balance the need to protect the public with the industry's demand for innovation?
This is Mark Dayton. Well, we need to protect the public first and foremost, and we need government to do its best in cooperation with the researchers and with the companies who are in the field of biotechnology to assure that protection. Consumers have a right to know what it is that they're purchasing, whether it be on the package, whether it be proper labeling, and farmers individually need to be protected from those adjacent to them or who are going to be affected. There was a serious case of pseudorabies in this vicinity which wiped out a number of farmers' hogs last year. They had to start over. The source is hard to trace. It came in the air, according to what I was told. So you can't just say that somebody has a right to do their own experimentation or development. There's an interdependency in rural Minnesota as there is in our society, and that freedom to experiment has to be balanced with public and neighbor protection.
This is Mike Cerisi, and this question goes back to one of the things I was talking about market intervention to make sure we maintain the good, productive, efficient small producers we have. We're going to have farmers in the future producing grains that will be dedicated to children with diabetes or people with a certain type of cancer. The biotech field is just going to explode, but we have to move carefully and with caution. Appropriate research and development. We need good research and development that's going on and funds for that. We need proper labeling. But this is, we can't close our minds to what is going on in the world. We have to embrace it and say, how do we control this technology to our benefit? And most importantly, from the standpoint of the rural economy, we have to capture the value of that for the producers. And we have to give the producers the type of aid through extension courses, et cetera, that enable them to understand this technology and to pool together in order to capture the value. I think it's essential for the growth of the rural economy.
I agree with the other candidates. Biotechnology research is needed. It's good, but we have to do it in a sensible manner. We do need good labeling. Biotechnology is something that research that works for our favor also. There are pitfalls to everything that in research but we need to use it to our benefit and be careful. And we have to, our own safety and our children's safety of the future, we need to consider. Biotechnology is something that can work very much for humanity if we do it properly.
I'm Jerry Janisich, DFL endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate, and I can remember as I was growing up, I always was told that two heads are better than one, so who knows?
Boy, what a slow group. What a slow group. Either it's a slow group or it's a sick group.
But, you know, science has done some pretty neat things. But ultimately, it'll be about the consumer's choice. It'll be about going to the supermarket, looking at the product and the label and what's on it, and purchasing it. And I believe that science is going to keep moving us in the direction, but the consumer is going to make a choice that's going to matter to how we do it and what we end up producing.
This is Rebecca Yanish. I'm going to make a bet that there's probably a number of people in this audience and in listening on the radio that have gotten caught in a vice on this issue. And the trap was to have seed companies marketing a product that they said would save you costs in terms of the amount of chemicals you'd have to put on your fields and give you a better return. And then on the other side of this vice was the companies in Europe that said, I don't want any part of that. Don't sell me any of that GMO product. And the farmer caught in the middle was getting a lower price. Now I think that there are ways that we can look at biotechnology and ways that they can improve our future. But let's be careful about how we study it and how we market and who benefits and who has to pay the price of being exploited on this issue or actually supported.
I'm James Gibson. The biotech industry, GMOs, there's the potential there for some great things. We know that the potential exists for reducing the use of herbicides and pesticides. The potential exists for adding nutrient value to certain foods, which could be very important in certain parts of the world. But as others have said, we need to be very careful, and I think the default needs to be that we need to err on the side of being cautious about the kinds of GMOs we bring online. So I think there has been a deficiency in the oversight of this industry, and I think we need to rectify that. But I think the biotech industry is here to stay, and we need to embrace it and just learn to control it.
Leslie Davis, you know, one thing you shouldn't do in business, you shouldn't try to fight a trend. And when something is trending, like bioengineering, you can't go against that. I understand that 54% of the soybeans in the state of Minnesota are Roundup Ready soybeans. And that number, according to suppliers and growers,
is moving to 70 or 80%. If somebody wants to buck that trend, they can go ahead and do that, but I think they're wasting their time. But the people in Europe, they must know something. They're rejecting this food, the GMO and the biotech kind of stuff, and they're not stupid. What have they got in mind? Where is their information that provides them with the thought that they're going to reject this kind of food from the United States? So I would suggest that people start thinking about the alternatives again. I, for example, prefer to move to organic food. And I think that's one of the trending areas. If you look at Vegetarian Times magazine, organic foods, things like that, alternative foods, that's where the direction is and that's where the growth is. And if you follow that trend, you'll make money.